There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. You are a lot quicker on that intro. And again, I forgot to unmute you on the YouTube. I am sloppy lately, but that's all right. Very quick on the intro. I was punching around scenes like a madman here.
Yeah.
You got a little more verbose.
I wanted to throw to you right away because I thought maybe you would have some snarky remarks about the Bucks-Nets series after we ended last podcast heated debate.
Justin, let me just be clear. Sometimes you don't have to say anything at all. Mm. When you're so clearly right and, everything could go wrong goes wrong, you know. One of the reasons I thought the Nets would win this series so handily is that their star power advantage was so profound, and they lost one of them.
I just want to remind you.
Just didn't it matter one bit?
I just want to remind you that the road to Bucks and six is paved with two losses along the way. That was a variance game. We saw this even with the LeBron Cavs. When you have too much time off and you didn't play a real team in the first round, you get rusty. Sometimes you start off slow. They're going to start hitting threes. Things will be fine. There was no James Harden there to kill the flow of the offense. I'm now grasping at straws, but but luckily we are not going to be talking about that just yet. We didn't get any great suggestions for a bet on that series. I think we should just go with a dinner bet.
Well, one of our Discord members suggests we shave our heads. I'm like, Jesus, can this be about the Cavs before we're risking
There were no suggestions that didn't upset one of our partners, whether it be our life partners or our big business daddy partner in the Cleveland Cavaliers. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll just stick with dinner. But today we are going to be diving into our three biggest questions for the Cavs this offseason. We are just over 2 weeks away from the NBA draft lottery. A whole lot is about to become clearer as we get the results of that lotto. But there is so many questions with such a pivotal offseason that I thought it'd be a good idea for us to dive into kind of our three biggest questions that we each have. So, Carter, would you like to go first, or do you want me to?
I would love you to lead us off, pal.
So, my biggest question is, how much do the Cavs value Colin Sexton, and in what way do they value him? Because not only do you have the contract discussion, which we've dived into, we have to figure out exactly how they feel he slots into the future as well. Because one of the biggest things that we saw down the stretch when there wasn't really a whole lot to look at with the Cavs was the playmaking really advanced to another level where you start to think, hey, maybe Colin Sexton could actually be a backup point guard, which if that's the case, that's significant because it's a whole lot easier to kind of slot him in to play 16 minutes at the shooting guard position and 16 at backup point guard. But if you don't feel confident with that, or if you're investing in a backup point guard, which is something that we've discussed quite frequently recently, those guys are going to be eating a lot of those minutes. And that basically slots Colin Sexton into 32 minutes at the shooting guard position, which might eat into Isaac Okoro, might eat into whoever you're drafting. Right now, that's justifiable, but I just think from a team-building standpoint, if you don't feel he can be that backup point guard, it raises a lot of questions.
I think it's a perfectly fair question because, it really takes the conversation out of the abstract in a lot of ways, in my opinion. I like that framing because it's not just, do you think he's good? It's, do you think that he should eat up, like if he can't be your backup point guard, can you make it work?
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that right now, as the team is currently constructed, you can make it work because there isn't this, they're short on the wing. I think if Kevin Porter Jr. was still on the roster, we might feel differently about this.
Yeah.
But also, you know, if this is why the lotto is just going to tell us so much, you know, if it's three and they're pretty sure Jalen Green's going to be on the board, then you do have to make those kind of those decisions. I will continue to scream from the heavens that they have no obligation to make a contract extension this offseason, an offer, and try to lock him up at a number that is not team friendly. But yeah, I mean, I do think it is a huge question worth asking. Do you have anything before I kind of take the reins?
Well, no, I just want to expand on a little more, because you mentioned they're under no obligation to pay him, but you are probably now getting a sense of what he and his camp expect when it comes to salary. And that has to factor in, because if you're still at a point where you're not ready to commit to him being that backup point guard, then all of a sudden you're really committing to that shooting guard spot, and you're also potentially committing one of those designated rookie extensions to him as well, which I would have to imagine. Like, if you feel that you're comfortable with him being that backup point guard, then you're saying, okay, now we don't have to maybe spend $9 million a year to get a backup point guard. We feel good about this. Maybe we find a playmaking wing, whether it be through the draft, whether it be calling up a rookie president of basketball operations in Brad Stevens and figuring out what the market is for Marcus Smart, who might be able to play alongside Sexton in those second unit minutes. So you have kind of a hedge. Or maybe Lonzo Ball is someone that you could pursue in a sign and trade. Like, there's a whole lot of questions that are really still murky when you don't know what role Sexton is going to play moving forward. And the other part of this is, how do you value him if trade calls come in? Because that is a possibility as well. If all of a sudden you're getting offers from him and you're not quite comfortable committing the amount of money that he wants, but some other team is, what does that net you? Like, I really think that as much as I want to move forward with the young core and Larry, there's tough decisions coming ahead for this team, and they have to figure out what the value is both internally and what the value is externally when it comes to teams making trade offers for these guys.
Yeah, I mean, totally. And I do think that is the dichotomy they need to decide on. He is either their backup point guard and starting two, or he is exclusively there too, and they are not interested in investing other resources at that position.
Right.
I completely agree. And that commitment starts to get a lot more interesting, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you really can't hedge it. You kind of have to pick one of those two things. Because if you go spend your full mid-level on TJ McConnell or someone like that, you don't go then give him 7 minutes a game.
Right, exactly. Like, you're slotting in Garland for 32, and that leaves you 16 minutes. And like, if Colin
plays 8 minutes at the backup one, which seems very, very marginal, then you've got eight left, and that is not going to work for anyone they've invested in at that position. So it does start to, you know, make the case for exploring what your other options are. But again, this all comes, you know, so much of this is hedged by like what happens in the lotto, because if they land with a three in the lotto, that makes, you know, if they end up leaving this draft with a three or a two, really, it makes the decision harder, because you have to kind of commit to either Isaac losing a lot of minutes or Colin losing a lot of minutes. And if Colin's losing a lot of minutes, because you've already invested in a backup point guard and you have another wing you're interested in, then it gets much harder to invest. You're either not investing in your draft pick and playing them, bringing them along very slowly, which where the Cavs are drafting, they probably don't want to do entirely. They don't want to, you know, have someone completely benched, or they got to start making some hard decisions. So, like, I think you're right that you can't just, I sometimes treat the contract being so far away, in my opinion, you know, when they have to make a call, it's kind of this like panacea where it's like, don't worry about it, kick the can. But like, it should drive decision making. They need to have these hypothetical conversations now.
Right.
Hiram's going to hate this talk so much.
Well, no kidding. This is one of those spots where I'm really grateful that I'm not the one making decisions, because I don't think there's an easy answer here at all. I would say, in a perfect world where you can just wish up a type of archetype and add them to the team. It'd be really nice to get a playmaking wing, because then you're really hedging your bets. You're saying, okay, this guy might play with Sexton in the second unit.
And you're very specifically a playmaking three. You know, this is why Cade is so important, and would be such a game changer, because now you can play it out.
Yeah.
You can spend the whole year figuring out if Okoro is a two, or if Okoro needs to be your sixth man, or if Colin is a two, or Colin needs to be your sixth man, or if that extra playmaking juice allows Colin to be a bit, that backup point guard a little bit easier. There's a thousand variables that that you can explore over the course of a full season if you win the lotto and get Cade. Everyone else poses questions that need to be answered.
Yeah, and to be clear, the point of this episode is to kind of discuss what the biggest questions are, not necessarily give the answers to those questions. I mean,
no.
We have opinions, but I mean, it all depends what's available there on the market, what he's asking for, where you land in the lottery. There's just so many questions there, but I've taken enough of the time with my first question, Carter. What's your next one?
My one is kind of related, but it's almost a little wider, which is, how much does this team actually love its core four?
Mm.
Because every single top prospect, I think with the exception of Cade, poses a... And really, it's core roster. Because I would include guys like Larry Nance in that core group that are a meaningful member of this team's rotation. And even Kevin Love, though, we obviously have talked about that at length. But like, you kind of know who this team's top seven are. And every single pick outside of Cade Cunningham throws a wrench into it. If they draft someone like Evan Mobley, what does that affect their willingness to go spend on Jared Allen?
Mm-hmm.
How confident are they that those two can play together? And are they? And then you look at someone like Jalen Suggs. If you think that you already have your point guard of the future and you don't view Jalen Suggs as an off guard, maybe you don't take him, but if they take him, what does that say about what they think about Colin Sexton? What does that say about what they think about Darius Garland?
Mm-hmm.
Because the fit is so odd and so off that it means that they're not as invested as we think they are. Or, frankly, they didn't have any better options.
Yeah.
Even down the board, guys like Scotty Barnes have serious implications for the rest of the team if they're going to hit.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's kind of my big question is, you say you love your core four. We love your core four. But, how eager are you to upgrade on them?
Yeah, yeah.
Because really, ultimately, you very likely will have a chance to upgrade on them if these players are as good as Draft Twitter tells us they are.
Right, absolutely. And it ties into the question that I had as well, which is, how rushed is this team to make the next step? And rush might not be the right word. Like, I think next season is the time where you would expect this team to make a next step. I saw Taylor Rooks had retweeted a conversation she had with Trey Young last year, where he was saying, hey, we're starting a whole bunch of guys 22 and younger. Like, yeah, that's kind of an excuse, but at the same time, we're going to need to take a step ahead next year. And while I don't think you can replicate what the Hawks did specifically, there's going to be options available, whether it is looking to move this pick for a proven talent, whether it is, as we alluded to, something involving Sexton or Nance. Like, there's so many different avenues that this team will have to get creative with if they do want to improve the roster. How much of a rush are you in to make that next step? How many long-term assets are you willing to part with to make that next step? Where does Larry factor into the future as someone that's turning 29? Like, these are all really difficult questions. And to me, the 2022 first-round pick is a really intriguing asset. Like, I think there's going to be a lot of teams that are willing to bet that the Cavs won't take that next step last year. And if you are confident in your core and you're willing to give up that pick in a deal to add a proven talent, to add some seasoning to this roster, that might be something that's worth exploring. If the Houston Rockets don't land in the top four and they lose their first round pick, you have their unprotected second round pick next year. That might be an asset that you want to strike on right away, because it's going to have peak perceived value, because the worst team in the league didn't get a first round pick in that situation.
They'll fall down to 18, I think. But yeah, didn't get a first round pick.
not a lottery pick.
Yes.
That's a helpful correction, but at the same time, 18 isn't going
worse.
To swing things, right? Like you don't know what that team is going to be at all. Like they were the worst in the league, and they're probably losing a few more guys. So things are not pretty in Houston. So what does that get you, right? Like I think that is going to be one of the bigger questions, is just how aggressive this team gets and how creative they are in looking for ways to improve the roster.
Yeah, it is certainly, you know, I think that kind of ties into one of my other questions, but you know, I might as well just rip the Band-Aid off there and say my other question is, how aggressive should the team be to mm-hmm. upgrade their roster? Because I think you're right. You know, one of the roads to picking up talent is trading lightly protected or unprotected firsts.
Yep.
And it's a dangerous game to play. Sometimes it's all right. You know, I mean, think about the Dallas Mavericks. You know, trading a couple firsts to get up and go get Luka.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a really, really bad idea. Think Minnesota Timberwolves, who thought they were ready to take a leap, traded a protected first and then to pick up D'Angelo Russell, and it didn't move the needle enough, and now they're in huge, huge trouble. Yeah. Where Golden State can pick up a premium top five pick in a loaded draft. Because they were reckless. So the Cavs have to be really, really smart. But, you know, if they get a top pick, just, by the way, just like the T-Wolves won the lottery. So this, you know, as far as they were concerned last year, that feels pretty great. You get the first overall pick, add it to D'Angelo Russell, your star center, and here they are at the bottom of the league again.
To be fair, they did not love that situation, and they were trying to get rid of that.
They were trying to get out,
over.
But the point is, like, you had options to improve your roster. You kind of felt like, that's about as good of a scenario as you can be in. So yeah. If the Cavs do win this lottery and they have Cade Cunningham come into their back pocket, or even any of the top four guys, because obviously everyone loves the top of this draft, should they be willing to kind of mortgage their future and bet on this core, or should they keep playing it slow?
No, it's the tougher part of that equation too. Like if you are talking about moving the 2022 pick, there with the flattening of the lottery odds and the play-in, like you could have a successful season. You could be a seven seed like Boston, who wasn't a successful season by their standards, but they got to the play-in game, got injured, and potentially could have fallen out. Like you could be a seven seed, have Darius Garland, or let's say they get Cade and Cade goes down and you lose both of your playing games. All of a sudden that pick is now in the lottery with flattened odds and a better chance of jumping up than there would be in the past. So that has to factor into the decision making as well. And like that's a scary prospect, because not only do you have to avoid being in the lottery and giving that team a chance if it is an unprotected pick, you now have to deal with the reality of the playing game. So that is a really, really tricky spot to be in. Personally, I would still say it's worthwhile to go for it if you are adding a young piece. Like,
to be a good young piece. It cannot be an okay young piece. It can't be a good but pretty flawed young piece. There can be no, you know, discussion as to whether the player is very good.
Right. And if you are trading one of the young four, or if you're trading Larry, or if you're trading this pick, I would want a player coming back that is on the Jared Allen timeline, but probably a better player than Jared Allen. Like, I think that would be the standard. Like, I wouldn't advocate making a move to make a move. That's usually when a lot of the mistakes in NBA history have been made. But if there is an opportunity to add someone that fits with the young core, that adds to the young core but is a proven talent, you go for it. I mean, I've been trying to speak Brandon Ingram into existence for 2 years. Like I've done it like three or four times in the last couple of weeks. But like that would be an example if that's someone that's on the market. Now, once the Pelicans signed him to that contract, a lot of my dreams kind of went to crap, but you never know. Like, what if Pascal Siakam's on the market? What if
the Cavs, I'm already seeing Kevin Pelton's F-minus grade if the Cavs traded their 2022 first for Pascal.
I could definitely see that. Actually, you know, this is off topic, but it made me laugh. Someone resurfaced the Bleacher Report grades for the Nets Boston trade, the infamous one. And the Nets got an A while the Boston Celtics got a B in that deal. I love trade reactions right after they happen.
Yep, it's an impossible game. So, you know, no shade at Kevin Pelton. I'm still mad at him for his, like, C grade for the Jared Allen deal or whatever it was.
Yeah.
He was not a fan. But, you know, in fairness, like, that's another huge question. It's not one of my three questions, but, like, how much are you really going to pay Jared Allen? Mm-hmm. Because he did not play great down the stretch. Now, he got hurt, and the season was lost, but he was not I do not feel like he made a meaningful impact down the stretch.
That's
fair. To the team's success, and that matters a little, right?
It does matter a little.
$100 million.
It does matter a little, but at the same time, it
doesn't matter a lot to me, to be honest, but I'm just trying to have the conversation.
It's an important conversation. I'm glad we're having it. The tricky thing there is Jared Allen and most big men in the NBA are reliant on guards to get them the ball, and he has tremendous chemistry with Darius Garland, and Garland being out of the lineup, I think, buys him a little bit more forgiveness because the Cavs were once again without a point guard. Now, he kind of developed a little bit more chemistry with Sexton, and Sexton would find him a little bit more down the stretch, but you would have to imagine.
I felt it on the defensive end more than anything.
That's a very good point, and that would be what I would point to as not being as impactful. But I'm still a believer in his upside. Like, I think there's still room for him to grow.
I still don't think he impacts the defense yet like Larry does.
No.
And physically, he should impact the defense much more than Larry does.
Right, and you would hope that as he continues to fill out and physically mature on the court as well, with more experience, that he would take a next step. Because I do think that there's potential for him as a passer. I think there's some potential for him to stretch the floor. We've seen kind of those corner threes with good mechanics and good touch kind of be an encouraging sign. But the biggest thing to me, and especially with centers that are 23 or younger, a lot of them are good individual defenders, but it takes them time to understand team defense, right? To really be that floor general on the defensive end of the floor, which I think we can all agree Jared Allen isn't at that point yet. But as you become more comfortable, as you recognize what the offense is running, that's when you really start to become a more vocal leader, hopefully. And that's where I really think Jared Allen still has a leap ahead of him. And part of why I just think you lock him up. Like, you offer him a 5-year deal under the designated rookie extension amount, but you offer him a 5-year deal on day one because you want to lock him up and you want to be there for that upside. Because I do think that there's still a lot of room to grow, even if the box score numbers don't necessarily jump out in a big way moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I totally get that. And I think you do too. But it is a question of, like, to me, it's almost how high do you want to go? Because if it's 4 years, 100 or 5 years, 100 million, you know, that feels fair to me. Feels a little high. Yeah. But also, you know, who I think is actually a really relevant kind of discussion point here is Clint Capela.
Yeah.
Who, you know, kind of was just the lob threat, in my opinion, in Houston.
Yeah,
I don't think he was a defensive floor general in Houston. I never thought, oh man, like, they are so good because he's out there on that end of the floor.
I think his leap into that kind of a player came this year.
Yeah, and that's kind of, well, thanks for getting there. But you know, that's kind of where I'm at with him, where it's like, I don't think he was a great defender, but now he is. Mm-hmm. And he is the reason that Hawks team is so stout on that end of the floor at times, despite having some pretty flammable pieces otherwise. I think that's what you're betting on if you're the Cavs. You're saying, we think you can anchor our defense in a significant, meaningful way as you get older. Again, he's just 22 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. And you threw out the $100 million figure that's been mentioned. That's a 5-year deal. Like, I'm offering him that day one. Give him the term. Give him the long-term stability. Clint Capela, years ago, the reported deal was $590 million, which it's still funny to me that people didn't make a stink about that, but like a year before, $582 for Tristan got treated as a max contract. It drives me nuts, but you know what? Some of the narratives around anyone involved on a LeBron team can get a little bit annoying, including Ty Lue, who is now 4-0 in game sevens and has three comebacks from 0-2 in those series.
Turns out he's a really, 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 really good coach.
There's probably a reason why a lot of stars advocate for him to become the coach. I think LeBron did that when LA had their coaching change. He certainly did that in Cleveland. Kawhi and Paul George played a role in saying that they wanted him to be their head coach after Doc Rivers moved on from the team. So, yeah, turns out good coach. Who would have thought, right, Carter?
No one could have guessed, you know, that he would be a capable coach. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's wild. That team is a sloppy bunch, and he's really the only leader they got. But I've already done two of my big questions. What is your second question?
Well, I already did my second as well with how rushed the team is to make the next step. But my third and final one is, how much tolerance do the Cavs have for drafting outside the second tier this year? Like, I really like a lot of these prospects.
Oh, that's a good framing. I
think no matter where they land, there's going to be someone that I'm interested in. Like, yeah, I've seen Barnes go anywhere between 6 and 12. I think Moses Moody would be available.
He's going
even
five.
If he might go five, but that
he's
then
going
again,
five. I'm that, telling you right now.
Then again, that bumps someone interesting like Kuminga down, right? Like, but with the Cavs, like, I think if you get Cade and probably Mobley and maybe even Green, depending on how they feel about him, I think those guys you stay put. But outside of that, like, I think you really get into an interesting space where what I would advocate for, I'm not going to advocate for trading down in this draft. I think that's insanity. But what I would do,
I think it's just short of insanity. I think you could, in the right construct, in the right deal, it's not insanity.
Okay.
It's bold. I think it's similar. And people will hate this because they don't remember what it was like at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's similar to when Danny Ainge traded Markelle Fultz, the pick that became Markelle Fultz, to go down and draft Tatum. Because if you'll remember, Tatum was not considered on the same tier as Markelle Fultz. He was not by any means. And so can I pitch you a hypothetical here?
Yeah, you might be pitching the hypothetical I was about to bring up, but
so,
go ahead.
So let's say they land at four, Green's off the board. And they love Scottie Barnes. They think he is as good of a prospect as Suggs without any of the fit concerns. If they trade down two spots, pick up a significant asset of, you know, at least a first of some sort to trade down two spots and then go get Barnes, is that insanity?
No. No, I wouldn't call that insanity.
I don't think it's insanity.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a helpful correction. If the Oklahoma City Thunder get picks 3 and 5 and you're sitting there at two, like, I might be into that.
That's a fun one. Like, but yes, I think there is a case, but you have to be really sure. You know, there's a reason Danny Ainge was willing to take the heat on, because that was not a popular trade at the time.
Yeah.
No. They needed a guard. Because that was pre-Kyrie, and that was not a popular trade. But Danny was like, "Yeah, I think Jalen's better, so I don't mind."
Do you have a trade outline in this draft? Like
Scottie Barnes?
No, but
wherever he's gonna go is where I'm willing to go down to.
No, what I mean by that is, where is the pick where you would be willing to trade that draft pick for an established player and not get a pick in this draft? Like, to completely trade out of this draft, you are not making a 2021 pick. Where is that line for you?
Four.
It's probably mine, too.
And here's the thing. It's a sliding scale, because it's not an easy, it's not a clean answer. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm trading four, and just because you have been enamored with him for so long, and Brandon Ingram is the return, that's interesting. If
I don't think that would be enough. Yeah,
I know. I understand that. But I'm just saying, like, a really good young player that we already know is very productive.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if, like, Buddy Hield, you know, like a productive player.
CJ McCollum.
Yeah, exactly. Those kind of players. No, thank you. Now, 6 or 7? 8? Maybe I'm a little bit more interested, though I'm not super hyped about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
But like, you could talk me into it. So it's still a sliding scale, but like, if it is three or higher, the a king's ransom must be paid.
Yeah. And I think even if they land at six, like, I do really like Scotty Barnes.
Me Barnes, man. I freaking love Scotty Barnes.
I'd trade up. I would look to trade up or out as well. Like, I think you, and this really gets to trying to figure out what options are available. Like, you don't do it just to do it. I wouldn't just write any team a blank check in either any of these moves. But I think you have to explore those options because you do have limited ways to get better. And if you can add a player, like, if you're doing that, I think it has to be a second contract guy. Like, I think it has to be someone 25 and under that fits the core, makes sense, is an established player. Likely you'd have to give up more assets. But, like, that would be the type of player that I think you would be willing to give that up for. And whether that's in combinations with players that are already on the roster or if it's just the pick itself, that would be interesting. Like, I mentioned the situation hypothetically where OKC, let's say they get 4-5 or 3-5 and there's the potential for a trade back. I think before I make that move, I'm shopping that pick that I don't have yet. And I don't want to pick two rookies in this draft. Like, I'm looking to see what options are available there before I make a decision on a hypothetical trade back trade. Like, I really do think that the situation that the Cavs are in is a promising one. I think they have a good young core. I think they are going to be taking a step forward next year. But you do really have to get creative. You really have to explore every single option because the avenues to improve this team organically, there's not a whole lot of ones that are obvious to me right now. Now, there's a whole lot of things that happen in the NBA that aren't obvious to me before they happen. And I go,
we know,
oh.
Justin. We know.
As the Bucks fall down 0-1. But I just think that that's the smart way to approach this offseason. I don't think you should be so in love with the core and the team that you have that you aren't looking for ways to get better. I think that should be the case almost with any team.
Especially on unproven teams, you know, like you can't fall in love with what you got in your house when the house is, you know, like, they're not winning yet. It's not like they've done anything. Like, they've improved. I feel better. And we've said multiple times, like, we feel better about this team than we did the year prior, than we did at the end of the year prior.
Oh, yeah.
And that's been the last couple years. I feel better than I did before. So it's like you're moving your way there. You're moving your way there. You're moving your way there. But ultimately, no one has made themselves inevitable. Even Darius has not made himself.
Yeah.
Like, so there ain't no Luka on this roster right now where you go, yep, that's our guy forever.
Yeah.
Like, so unless you got a that's our guy forever or a core of that's our guys forever, you can't be too precious. You know, mm-hmm. you have to be really, really smart about how you build. To that end, my kind of third question is, do the Cavaliers have a power forward on their roster that's starting for their team even 1 year from now?
Man, I mean,
because that really should inform a lot of, it'll really inform a lot of decisions. And it, like, how, because if they don't think Larry Nance is a starter quality player,
mm-hmm.
and you have people like Windhorst, what was the report Windhorst had? Was it him?
He mentioned on the radio that there are still multiple teams pushing hard for him. I think he mentioned that there is still one team offering multiple first round picks.
Okay. So
before you continue, I just want to say we have not been told anything on this. Like, when you say if the team doesn't feel that he's a starter, we have no idea.
No.
That's just linking back to previous conversations we've had.
No. Yeah. It's just if he isn't that, then you probably should consider if his value is that high, then you need to have those considerations of if we think this player is X and the rest of the league thinks he is Y and they do not align, then, you know, if you're getting, you know, multiple firsts for someone like that, that's big ammo. If you do want to go chase a Brandon, I don't want to trade him. I think Larry Nance is a starting caliber player in the right context, and worst case is a great elite six man culture guy. off the bench.
Yeah, and like and a big
that,
part
that
of
can play multiple positions and eat 28 to 30 minutes a game, and really that's what I care more about. But with that said, between Larry and Love, they have two established players at the position that will require minutes while healthy. So if you go draft a Scotty Barnes,
you gotta start
picking. You gotta start making choices here. You're kind of out of options. So either you are comfortable at that position in the short term because you have Kevin and Larry under contract and Larry under a longer contract, or you want to go chasing upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
So like that, I think that question is a huge, that position is a huge question mark for them because I don't know what the best path forward is right now. Obviously I love Scotty Barnes and I love Larry Nance. And if that's my power forward room, I'm fine with that. Is that the best use of resources? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a really tricky spot. The one thing I'll say is mentioned...
Let me be clear. The official party line of this podcast is we love Larry Nance.
Yeah. And
he's the
and
only
this
one
is another...
come on the podcast. So, you know, by default.
This is another one of those really callous conversations. And
it's terrible.
I think it's important to acknowledge the other side of this. Like, if you are talking about players as assets and making all these evaluations, you also have to have an understanding for players when they get frustrated. Like,
makes hard to build a culture.
We had like sympathy for Andre Drummond going through the situation where it was clear, yeah, he probably could have handled things better after the Jared Allen trade, but it's understandable where you were putting in a career best effort, you were being really productive, and now it's clear that you're not part of the future. Like, you have to
understand. Kobe acknowledged that himself.
Right, exactly. So when you are treating it as a business when you're discussing team building, you also have to have an understanding for players when they also treat it as a business. And when it comes to Larry, like part of the reason why I said that I like him as the third big is in an effort to keep him healthy. Like, if you can get 27 good minutes from Larry as the backup big, that's really, really valuable. Like, that's so good. And hopefully you get more games out of him.
But ultimately, it means you have to invest more at the position.
Right.
And I mean, as much as I love Dean Wade, like, I don't think the team should view him as a starter, even a nominal one.
Yeah. And you know what?
Like, once they're really good.
And when it comes to Larry, like, you mentioned potentially moving him in anticipation of making another move. I would really want to have that lined up because I'm not trading him for picks. I am not trading him for picks. We need adults in this room. We need leaders in this room. And Larry fills all of that. And it's not just because he comes on the podcast.
Yeah. Which is why, like, ultimately, like, I would rather just, like, I've said it a billion times, but, like, my North Star is normalcy and good culture and a team that is building in the right direction. That's what I want. And Larry kind of puts you on that level. But the Cavs do need to have these conversations. This is a question. Again, this is not an answers podcast. This is a questions podcast.
Yeah.
For this particular episode. And I think they really need to do an evaluation of how they're going to allocate resources across this roster. Because, you know, it becomes a challenge when you're allocating the way they are to that power forward room. And if you don't think that's the answer.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And to circle back with what I said earlier, I'm calling up Brad Stevens, the president, and seeing what's going on there. Like, even if I could poach Marcus Smart. Like, Marcus Smart, yeah.
Dude coached Marcus Smart. I'll bet he'll ask for 9 first.
That's a very good point. But Smart would be one of those guys that, like, you can play Sexton as a point guard offensively, and you have Smart as the 2 defensively in that second unit. Like,
is a more capable playmaker than people think.
Right, right. As a third guard, someone
really
like a
Marcus Smart. I know as a Cavs fan, we're supposed to dog every Celtic, but I love that dude as a player.
Yeah, the two guys that fit that mold to me are like Marcus Smart and Lonzo Ball. Like, they do it in different ways, but they both like are such valuable parts of a guard rotation, and they can really play with any type of guard. So those would be interesting guys, but I'm absolutely seeing if I could take advantage of a rookie president of basketball operations. But yeah, like, it's really tricky, and this is another spot where I'm really happy we're not making these decisions. We're just trying to figure out what the biggest questions are, because, man, like, if I had to guess, I don't think it's going to be an insanely active offseason. Like, Yes. Maybe around the margins. I don't know. Like, I think a lot of the rotation might look different. But when we're talking about evaluating the value for guys like Larry Nance, Colin Sexton, the first round pick, future picks, Darius Garland, Jared Allen, like all these guys, I think the only probably the safest would be Isaac Okoro, because there's just no way his trade value is ever going to come close to his upside when he's just coming off a rookie year. But the value you need to get in return for any of those assets would have to be so significant, and those guys don't often hit the trade market. So it may just be supplementing the rotation, increasing your margin for error. I think they're going to try to be active, because this has been a front office that's been active every single year that we followed them. But I just don't know really what to expect. Like, I think,
yeah, it's funny, because you say, you know, you said I think it could be a slower one, and then part of me was like, no way. And then I thought, how would you probably define an active offseason? And I would almost say, and I'm developing this in real time, don't hold me too accountable, but I almost feel like a good way to judge how crazy their offseason was how many new rotation members do we think we will need to account for this upcoming year? I think backup point guard, definitely. Whoever their first round pick is, definitely. I don't see a lot of other stuff that's definitely going to happen. I mean, I think they'll try to move off Brents if they can.
Who knows?
Maybe, maybe. But like, ultimately, like, it's funny. My brain goes, "Oh, half the roster's probably going to change," and then then you actually start to put it together, and you go, "Maybe not." They're not like a lot of obvious changes.
It's also weird, because it's not like they were very good last season, but they also, like, there's a lot of guys in position already. Like, there's not. Like, there's holes in this roster, but there's also not holes, right? Like,
the only thing that's different is that half the team was hurt all year, and ideally, a lot of people that were in the rotation might get knocked out just because better players got healthy.
I would define a active / crazy offseason as, is there a new member of the core? If one of the core, let's call it the core five. Let's call it the core five. So the four young guys and Larry. If one of those guys is moved, I would define that as a crazy offseason. Like, I
would say that is fair, but I would not say adding a member is crazy, because if they don't add a member to the core, then that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Well, if they don't add a player we consider a core player, then either the lotto went so terribly wrong and they fell to 7 or 8.
Even then, they should be
a swing that we hate.
Even then, those guys would be part of the core. Like, if you're drafting at 8,
that's fair.
And there's not a trade up. Like, I'm referring to in the trade market, like trade and free agency market. Like, if you went out there and added someone that you consider part of the core, that would be nuts to me. Like, not nuts in an unexpected way, but that is going to be something that is going to warrant a emergency podcast. And
there's a lot of roads to a fascinating season next year.
Oh yeah, yeah. And that goes beyond Darius Garland 2022.
God, I hope they don't fall in the lottery. It's getting real, man.
Man, have you been keeping track of the Tankathon spin of the day I've been doing on the Chase Down account?
Oh, sure have, Justin. I'm a big supporter of your social media work when you tag me on it.
Those are your tweets, man. I have never tagged you. I don't know what you're implying, but the luck I've been having with just one spin each day is absolutely absurd, and I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign. It kind of freaks me out, because I think you can use up your good luck, or maybe it's a sign from the universe saying good luck is coming the Cavs' way. I don't know how to read that just yet.
I just got this gut feeling it's gonna go right for us this time, and you know me, normally that ain't me, pal.
I think it's gonna be 2 or 3. That's my gut.
Maybe I'm just trying to will Kate into existence. Who's to say?
I'm fine with that, obviously. Like, we would... The reaction to the Cavs landing Kate in the lottery would just be absurd. Like, I'm going to have to plan that out ahead of time us fired.
I am in love with your get 2, trade down for 3 and 5 concept.
That would be pretty nuts, especially.
That would be pretty cool.
Especially if you can use 5 to get something established. Ooh. Oh,
stop it.
Ooh. Ooh. Carter.
It's getting sweaty in here.
It is, and that's not just because I'm wearing denim under a light. But that's probably a good place to wrap it up. When things get sweaty, we need to get going. We need to towel off a little bit. Hopefully, you guys, we've given you something to think about with this podcast, because I think there is a lot of interesting questions, and how the Cavs approach these questions is going to be pretty damn telling. I'm pretty excited for Tuesday's pod as well. We have friend of the podcast, Dave Dufour, making his return to the pod.
Talking playoffs.
Talking some playoffs and probably talking some Cavs too, because he was really high on the Cavs when we did our season preview, and I would love to get his thoughts on
that. Have we not had
him
on since the preview?
We have not had him on since before the season started, so wow. We need to get a little bit of the Dufour recap, because
guess we don't love Dave anymore.
There are not many opinions I value higher than his, so I'm really looking forward to having him on. But I always value the support of our listeners. If you guys are watching on YouTube, make sure you like and subscribe. It is the best way to help us show up in the algorithms. If you're listening via podcast, make sure to leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, and resubscribe to help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.